Before we begin, get into our study this morning, I want to again publicly express my thanks to Ron for filling in for me during this class. He had to do so on rather short notice, but I appreciate the fact that he took the time to go over this material, and he indicated to me that we got down to 3 verse 5, and I would like to remind you as we continue our discussion of the text that the admonition is given by James to teachers to be careful with regard to their instruction. And then there is this discussion in verse 2 and going down through verse 12 of the text of the tongue and the dangers that dangers of sin, dangers of indiscretion, stumbling, as verse 2 states, that come as a result of the tongue, those things that we say, and how careful we need to be for a couple of reasons. One, because of the nature of the tongue and how indeed many sin, how difficult the tongue is to control, how heinous the sins may be that are committed by the tongue. All of these things are going to be brought up as we go through the remainder of this material and discuss both the illustrations that begin in verse 6 verse 3 and go through verse 8, but also the final illustrations given in verses 9 through 12. So there in verse 3, there is the example of the bit that is put in a horse's mouth so that by use of the bridle they can turn the whole body, indicating again that just a small thing is able to control a great beast. Also in verse 4, the ships. Ships are great large vessels that are turned by a very small rudder. And of course the application in verse 5 is, even so the tongue is a little member of those great things. That indeed the tongue has that same ability to direct in either good or bad ways. But it is a little member, verse 5. But it boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And so even though the tongue is a small thing, it is something that is very difficult to control. And I think that both by the admonitions that are given here in the text, and I think anecdotally by our experience in our lives, we recognize as Christians that the tongue can be perhaps the most difficult thing for us to control. I've said it on many occasions, see it in my own life, and I think that it can be demonstrated in most of our lives that there are things that we would never, as Christians, consider doing. I'm not saying that all Christians wouldn't be tempted to do some of these big, bad things that are listed in Scripture, because the Corinthians, for example, were characterized by many ungodly activities before they became children of God. But the fact is that we look at things such as sexual immoralities, murders, those kinds of sins that we can see as perhaps not only of breaking God's laws, but have greater consequences to us as we consider our the legal aspects of it in our society. But while we would stay away from those kinds of things, we are often quick to say an unkind word, to let an inappropriate word, or to engage in some type of gossip, or to prevaricate, which is a fancy word for lying. We can do those things, and often we'll do so if we're not careful. And so the need for care, as we consider the tongue, is certainly appropriate. And I think it's borne out in verse 6 when we are told the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body, sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea has been tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and go from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. And normally when I read this section of scripture, I stop and we'll get to it. You'll notice I read all the way through to the end, because it really is no stopping point. As you begin in verse 6, it goes through and the thought progresses with regard to, in effect, the untamable nature of the tongue, the need for care and control of it. So let's start in verse 6 and note a couple of things that are used to describe the tongue. It is first of all described as fire. That description is one that runs through the remainder of this. The tongue is a fire. I want you to notice what it says in the latter part of verse 6 concerning the tongue as a fire. It says it defiles the body. It sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. Now, looking especially at those last two clauses, when we talk about the tongue as a fire, I think that everyone is by nature a bit scared of or cautious concerning fire. I think that I personally, individually, have what is nearly a phobia when it comes to fire compared to some others. I'm very, very uncomfortable with regard to fire. Now Donald can be a fireman. I don't think I ever could. He goes into the flames, and I have a hard time lighting the barbecue pit. And this is something that I'm laying on my stomach trying to light a water heater, and I do not like being down there and striking the match in the open flame. When I was about 6 years old, I was with a group of older kids, and they accidentally set on fire the grass and the back fence in the alleyway. And I remember two things about that. Number one, everybody else got in trouble except for me, because I was the only one. And they were basically just scared for me. And secondly, that I was scared, and I did not like that at all. And I've always been a bit afraid of fire as a result of that. So I read these things, and the idea of a spark erupting and a flame beginning and the destructive nature of the fire is something that resonates with me. And may not with everyone as much, but I think we all do recognize the great destructive nature that fire can be. But the two phrases that are found here in the latter part of verse 6 are interesting in that it says it sets on fire the course of nature. It sets on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire by hell. I want to look at the last one first. It is set on fire by hell. The term is Gehenna. It has reference to that place of fire and brimstone, the second death. And of course, it is described in Scripture as being a place of torment where the worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. So the statement in verse 6 that the tongue is set on fire by hell is indicative of the evil nature of a tongue that is engaged in these kinds of sins and activities. Hell ignites the destructive tongue. If an individual is engaging in gossip or is lying or has hurtful things that he says, the origin, the derivation of those things said is hell, is an evil thing. The tongue can be greatly influenced by evil. Now, when we talk about the tongue, we can also speak of it in positive ways, even as you go down and we discuss this. In verse 9, we're told that with the tongue we bless our God and Father. Well, that's a good thing that you can do with the tongue. And so by saying that, we recognize that use of the tongue is not something that is ignited from or has its origin from hell. But we're talking here about the dangerous aspects of it. We need to recognize it for what it is. When we do speak in these unlawful ways and use the tongue in these inappropriate ways, that what we are doing originates from evil. It is from, or has its origin from hell. But the second phrase here which is actually the first in the verse, it sets on fire the course of nature. Is rather interesting. You may have one of the center references, definitions, and such contained. And I just kind of glanced at that. The term nature is also defined there in the text as existence in the course of existence. And I think that's what it's referring to. Let me give you a parallel. I was asking Josh about this right before class to make sure I got my name right. But those who are Civil War buffs or those who are familiar with history will remember during the Civil War the progress of General Sherman and his troops through the South. It's called Sherman's March, where he burned everything in his path. And the idea, of course, and it's not, he's not the only one to have done this, it's something that has been done in numerous military campaigns, is progressing and burning everything in your path so there is nothing left behind you, so that there is no possibility of regrouping. But it was a very destructive thing. It was horrific, as you read the accounts of what happened. Ruthless with regard to its practice and intent. And so I want you to think about or perhaps picture that idea of Sherman's march through the South, where he burned everything in his path, when you think about what happens with the tongue that is ignited by hell as it goes through life, as you progress with regard to the relationships that you have with others, with regard to the damage that is done to reputations, with regard to the horrific things that come as a result of a mouth that is ignited by hell. One who is characteristically a liar, a backbiter, a gossip, a profane individual, all those things. It's a very destructive thing that leaves destruction in its wake. And I think that's the idea that is derived here in verse 6. So, the language of James, and it is often the case with regard to the New Testament writers, if you take the time to just consider the image and to try to imagine it or to picture it, what's being said here is something that's very vibrant and indicates the destructive nature of every way.
And I think we have to be really cautious because in our society, we view a liar, and if you're going to see a cartoon or a television show, and a liar is often depicted in terrible clothing and scruffy, and you just know that's a bad person. But a gossip is often portrayed as a sweet little old lady serving tea and cookies in her living room while she just mangles everybody in sight. And I think we have to be careful to not take those two sins and equate them differently.
And to be honest, there are times in popular culture that even lying is addressed in a positive way. I think that with all these things, whatever, there are many ways to lie, to sin with the tongue, but all of those things I mentioned this at the beginning of our time together. There are certain things that we kind of look at as being big sins in the sense that they have great consequences to our welfare, especially if you're breaking the law. And then there are those things that we may not look at with the same amount of displeasure or distress as we could contemplate them. In fact, even in the phrase, a little white lie, or a juicy tidbit of gossip, and these kinds of things, we almost, as a society at least, make light of them, rationalize them, minimize them, and that's certainly the opposite of what is being done here in this text. I mean, he's talking about all the other kinds of sins, and then he comes in and he starts saying in verse 8, "No man can tame the tongue. It's an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. It's a great fire of iniquity. It sets on fire the course of our existence." You know, the Bible, when it talks about sin in the tongue, doesn't minimize in any way. It doesn't seek to rationalize or to utilize it is something that very clearly and very vibrantly expresses these sins as being destructive. And again, one of the reasons why they're so destructive is because we can allow ourselves to reach that point to where we do not think of them as that big a deal. And they become pervasive, and as a result of that, many lives are ruined, and reputations are ruined, and sins are committed. And Christians can be guilty of these things without really giving pause as to how bad a thing it is. And again, I mean, remember this, at least in part, within the context of he's just said to teachers, you know, let not many become teachers when you receive the stricter judgment. And then he starts talking about the tongue in light of that. If you're one who is in a position to where you're opening your mouth to give advice or to instruct or to direct individuals, you have to remember that this tongue that you're about to use is a very, very dangerous thing. And you have to be careful as a result of it. So very strong admonitions of morning's given. Anybody else want to add anything to that sixth verse? Yes, David?
Of course, there's many examples that we have and can use about the fire and the tongue. And a small fire will start out and then it keeps going and raging and and roaring and gets to the point that you can't even put it out, so you let it burn itself out. And the same with the tongue, with anger, which would fit into this, that when a person, you know, child of God gets angry with you or whatever, and you try to console them, and it doesn't do any good, so the best you can do is let them burn themselves out, hopefully that they'll repent and ask for forgiveness.
Anybody else?
I'm kind of a big fan of cowboy movies. I like to watch on TV, and there's, after a while, there's, you can kind of see all these stock scenes, you know, that they just use over and over again in different movies. And here's like some drifter walking into, riding into town, and somebody says, he looks like the guy that robbed the bank last week. And somebody else, we're going to let him get away with that. And somebody else says, get a rope. And all of a sudden, they're headed for the hanging tree because somebody just started this domino effect with this first word, you know. Some poor guy that didn't do anything wrong is got a rope around his neck. And it kind of sounds like the same thing going on here in verse 6. It's just somebody gets something started and there's no happy end to it. And it's the natural man is, you know, what's inside all of us, but the lid on, but it's difficult enough just managing ourselves without somebody else trying to provoke us. You know, you let that natural man loose, and that happens in a crowd or maybe around the bridge table, but you know, where something gets started and there's no end to it. Pretty soon it's get a rope, you know, somebody's reputation and life is ruined. I don't know, I just kind of, the picture in my mind is these cowboy movies, maybe everybody's got a different picture about how people act in a natural way when they're not trying to control themselves.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, in the latter part of verse 5, see how great a fire, or was it saying that? See how great a forest and little fire kindles. And that, you know, it quickly escalates and gets out of control, and just like a fire does. I was telling you about that occasion when I was 6 years old, and it wasn't the intent of those kids to burn down a fence and to endanger the neighborhood. It was their intent to start a little fire, but it was kind of like it is or was a couple of days ago before we finally got a little bit of rain. A spark just about anywhere in Texas would set the whole state up, just about how dry it was. But it's quickly, and those things can go out of control. We've heard that. I mean, there are stories that are told. There are entire premises of sitcoms and movies to where one little thing is said, and then by the end of it, everything is completely lost. So there's so many different scenarios we could raise along those lines. But it does indicate how dangerous it is. Now, and I'm just going to make one point about this, just as an aside, because I've seen it so often as a preacher. While it is a metaphorical use of the tongue, I want you to keep in mind the dangers of email instant messaging and texting in this regard. And the amazing thing that I've seen over the past decade, because I got into the computer stuff pretty early. I remember way back when on America Online and using 2400 baud modem, if anybody remembers what that is, sending email. And at that time, being involved in some discussion lists where preachers were so quick to interact with one another and shoot off messages and in and out, and how much trouble that caused. So much so that, wasn't very long before I got off some of those discussion lists because they were so destructive and I didn't want to have any part in it. And actually, that's kind of antiquated now as things have progressed to the point to where, if you have a Facebook account and have even some... even if your friends consist primarily of other Christians on Facebook account, you can sometimes be appalled at some of the things that you see quickly jotted off and sent out into the ether, and think, those things you ought to keep to yourself, or things you probably ought not to be thinking, and you sure shouldn't be writing other people. And it can have a snowball effect, and it can cause an awful lot of problems. And so it's a metaphorical use of the term, but we're talking about communication. Way back when you had a quill pen and what they call a fool's cap or something, the kind of sheet of paper, and you sit there and you composed and you thought and you could scribble and scratch and start over again, and then you had to put a stamp on it and you had to take it down to the mailbox. It wasn't quite as quick of getting into trouble as you are these days. But those kinds of things said, whether it's a written or a format, gets in trouble.
The whole premise of Christianity is built on caution. And the only time we're to be quick to do something is when there's obvious error and we need to combat it right then. So we're told to be slow to wrath, slow to speak. A carpenter is told to measure twice and cut once. Not in the Bible, but this is the whole thing is moderate, it's cautionary, it's think it through before you do, unless there's error that needs to be combated at that moment. So it all goes back to that.
Well, the law of love requires that all things be done for edification. And the concept of edifying is to be building up. That's everything that we do is for the purpose of strengthening and building up and helping. And unfortunately, too often the tongue is used to tear down and destroy. And that, of course, makes the image of the fire something so important. So it's a cautionary word that we should consider strongly. Christians, and again, of course, there's some young people in the class. With regard to the Facebook and the instant messaging, the texting, but especially with regard to Facebook or Twitter or some of the Google Plus now that's coming on. See, I am on the cutting edge of technology. I know what Google was. But when you're texting and you're sending these messages out, you are literally, especially because of how many are using it on, you are broadcasting your thoughts, random thoughts, to an extremely large number of people at a time. And I just would ask you to consider, say those of you who have 600 Facebook friends, if you were to be standing in front of 600 people, are you going to be just hitting stuff off the cuff, or are you going to be making sure of what you're going to say before you speak to them about a particular thing? You've got to think about it, and it is a dangerous thing, so something to certainly consider. So. Anybody else? Yes.
Don't mean to steal any of your thunder, but thoughts sometimes come quickly to mind. But you were talking about love being the solution to the problem. 1 Corinthians 15, verses 4 through 7 talks about how love will not do these things because that's the nature of love, not to sin against those you love. As Christians, our hearts and minds are changed, by the Lord, by the Word, so that it's against our nature to say these kinds of things. Now, if we're still saying them, something's wrong. We haven't changed. We need to work on that. The thing about the tongue, and we'll fix it, give you a couple of very interesting verses. There's a a literary figure of speech that uses exaggeration to emphasize its point. And I think that's what the Spirit is doing in these next couple of verses, uses exaggeration. The fact of the matter is, 1 Corinthians 10:13 doesn't help us when it comes to the tongue. Because the problem with the tongue is, it just happens. We were not tempted to say something wrong, and we think it, we say it. And we've got that disconnect between our brain and our mouth, and what we think comes out, and that's where we need to stop. I found like a very interesting psalm, Psalm 39, first few verses, David says, I will guard my ways, lest I sin with my tongue. I will restrain my mouth with a muzzle while the wicked are before me. I was mute with silence, I held my peace even from good. He was very careful in the things he said. Because once you say them, once they're out there, it's like you were just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll just give an example. From time to time, as a preacher, those kinds of communications, the delicate ones have to be entered into, whether verbally or in written form. And there was an occasion where I had to write a letter to another individual, and so I wrote the letter, and I looked at it, and I threw it away, and I wrote another letter, and I looked at it. This paragraph needs to go away, this sentence needs to go away, and these couple of words need to be modified. I read it again, and then I made a few other modifications, and I looked at it, and I thought, okay, I've gotten everything out of this that is prejudicial, that is hateful, that is inappropriate, that would do anything other than edify. And then I asked PA to read it, and he gave me about 3 or 4 suggestions about things I probably ought to take out of there and change and modify before I sent that particular letter out. And he was right, and I did make those changes because of reading it through his eyes, that I thought, okay, well, I still haven't reached that point that I need to reach in order to make this something that that is as it should be and productive and characteristically Christian rather than hateful. And again, you need to think about that. That is where the idea of being slow to speak comes from, and to be careful about that. We need always to have our mind in gear before our mouth starts running. And that is why when you look at these things and the descriptions that are given in those following verses about how you can't tame the tongue, it's such a danger. And it's so obvious because we all do it and we see others do it and it's so prevalent that it should be something that we think, yeah, you're right, let's be careful, but we aren't. As we should be. We're not as careful as we should be. So certainly something to consider, and I think borne out very clearly by the verse 6. Anybody else on verse 6 where you want? Yes, Josh.
I'm sitting here thinking, it's not so much that we should have to necessarily tame the tongue now. We should strive to, but we've been discussing love and what love produces. And I'm thinking about the words of Jesus in Luke chapter 6 and verse 45. It says, the good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good. The evil person out of the evil treasure produces evil. For out of the abundance of the heart does God speak. So if we are striving to be good in the first place, and we are watching ourselves to make sure that we are good, then it's not that we necessarily have to tame our tongue or keep our tongue from running. It's because what will come out will be what is proper anyway.
But I would say to you, what you're saying is exactly true, but that in fact what you're describing is the taming of the tongue part. In other words, it's not just a matter of sticking your hand in your mouth and grabbing a hold and not saying it. It's a matter of the maturation process and growing spiritually and such, so that what naturally comes forth is beneficial. And again, I have many you know, many things pop in my mind as far as events in my own life and circumstances. Another one that I think of is, again, an older preacher that I was having some conflict and disagreements as far as doctrinal issues and such. And I wrote him, or actually I called him on the phone and asked his advice and what he thought in regard to this teaching. And his language was cautious, and he was very reasonable, and he was advising care and to be careful in regard to the way in which I approached this. And it wasn't in any way compromising. He stood for truth. But what he was showing me in his things is that time and experience and knowledge showed him that you need to be a little bit slower and a little bit more cautious in your approach to these things. And so it is a matter of maturation process, and as you grow spiritually, you begin to be able to control your tongue better as time goes on. So it will be entertaining in that sense as well. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I would say that that's wrong.
That's fine.
Go ahead. And as an example, I use Psalms 39, verse 2, where David, as Dennis just read, said he had to tame himself to not say good things. That's what he said. He said he had to keep himself even from the good things. So if you fill your heart with love and you only say good things, you can still be incredibly destructive.
Yes, sir.
Saying only good things, and you still have to tame the tongue. And this is a bit of practical advice that somebody else has already mentioned, but I'll restate. And it's really what David is saying here. It's good to just make sure you've severed that connection, that direct connection. Don't let that direct connection from idea to tongue exist. Make idea go through another part of your brain. Even if you're going to be saying good things, let it go through another filter or two. God knows. I've spent an inordinate amount of my life trying to build filters in my brain, and I don't have a tenth of the ones that I need.
Yeah, you just told me I was wrong. I didn't think I was wrong. I may not have fully explained it and that extra part, but that
is it. You were wrong.
That's it.
It was wrong.
Okay.
That's what we're talking about.
All right.
Well, I think that, you know, like Jesus said, that, you know, we righteous indignation should be there. You know what I mean? Even though we have a filter, we do, you know, pull back. You know what I mean? Still, if someone's in the wrong, we need, you know, if I love you, I'll tell you the truth. You know, we need to let them know, not be nice about it, because they need to know that they're in error. I mean, I don't mean to be ugly to them, but, you know, like Jesus overturning the tables in the, you know, in the temple, you know, he showed that, you know, he let them know that what you're doing is wrong. And the reaction, I think, is,
well, yeah, and I hope that our discussion of this, as far as being careful what you say and such, would not in any way be construed as saying that admonition is improper. Because, again, as we consider the directive of love in 1 Corinthians 13 and the point that I make with regard to all things being done for edification and to edify and to build up, that admonition is part of that. Certainly, sometimes correction is needed. But it's simply a matter, again, of being sure that what you say, and be sure that saying something is appropriate, and if saying something is appropriate, then what you actually say is the appropriate thing to say. It's something that is a process, and you have to be careful about.
And just real quick, just sort of thinking about it, off the cuff, right? You were talking about Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good enough to post something and go, whoops, and then leave. I've been sent screenshots of something that I believe was on Facebook about 20 seconds. You know, posted it, and man, I shouldn't have done that, deleted it. Somebody had already taken a screenshot of it. Yeah. And there it is, your name,
what you said.
Emailed out to 100 people.
That's a good point. And for you guys that don't know what a screenshot is, don't worry about it, because you're not using Facebook. But there are people here who know exactly what he's talking about. Okay. Good. Yes, Dave.
Well, bring it out, you don't. You don't let these thoughts come into your mind, and that reminds me of a quote that I heard years ago, probably from Robert Turner. You can't stop the birds from flying over your head, but you can certainly stop them from building a nest in your hair. so you don't let those thoughts build up in your mind.
And the best way to keep the bad thoughts out is to fill your mind with good thoughts. By the way, this is another sage piece of advice from someone who talks a lot. Okay, let's go on. Continuing on in verses 7 and following, he begins to describe the various types of creatures that are tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no man can tame the tongue. Now, I am somewhat intrigued by what Dennis said. I've always made a distinction between the concept of taming and controlling. You mentioned your view that there is exaggeration here. Could you explain to me what you mean by that?
Yeah, I think he's using a figure here. The verse that you just read, 7, it says, for every kind of beast and bird and reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. We don't know all the creatures of the sea even yet. So there has to be an exaggeration. If we don't even know some creatures exist, and it can't be said that we've tamed them or controlled them. Either way. I think that's his point. He's comparing the fact that we cannot control our tongue, whereas all these other animals that we made an effort to control or tame, we've been successful in. And it's true. But within our own tongue, we can't control it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's obviously what's here is a contrast. I mean, you look at what we've been able to accomplish. The thing that comes to my mind when I see that is, I mean, there are others. You could talk about those that are ferocious. You could talk about, for example, lions in a cave with a lion tamer. You could also talk about size. You talk about an elephant. That's an amazing thing for me to see is this gigantic creature, this elephant, the largest land creature, and very commonly they are used as service animals and for entertainment and various things like that. So you know, man has that ability, and the thing that comes to my mind when we talk about the taming of these things, and of course, in a sense, they'll say, wait a second, they're still wild animals, they're not tame. Yeah, I know, but at the same time, you've got a lion tamer who says, open your mouth and stand out of the light. Wow. Or he tells the elephant, raise your leg, and he lays down underneath and lets the elephant put his leg on his chest or on his head or something like that. And, I mean, that's control. And that's what we're talking about here is control. Is that men have had that ability to learn to control these creatures and have they amaze us with their ability. In India, the guy that sits in front of a cobra with his flute and tames the cobra, tames the snake charmer, it just amazes us the ability these people have. But you can't do that with the tongue. It's not possible to do that with the tongue. The tongue is always just about to be out of control. I mean, that's the way you have to look at it, is that wild creature that has to always be under your thumb, always be, attention must always be paid to it, it has to always be uppermost in your mind, you always have to take care because at any time. And you know this. I mean, I've had faithful Christians, mature Christians, who've come up to me and apologized to me for something that they said that was just not necessarily unkind, but just thoughtless, and they did wrong in doing it. And I mean, they're wonderful people, but that happened, and I've done the same. I've had to go and say, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. And I don't know why I said it, but I did. And that's the way the tongue is. And so as you compare it to the creatures and such, you recognize, yeah, we can do that with the lions, and we can do that with the elephants, and we can do that with the cobras, but you can't ever get to that point to where you can feel comfortable sticking your head in the mouth, you know, when it comes to controlling this creature, this tongue.
Sure. I don't see this taming as sort of a digital concept, you know, something's not either tamed or it's not tamed. It's a matter of degree. You can tame a horse and train to pull a plow or drive, but it's not a done deal. You're around a horse, you better be careful, even if it's a trained, tamed horse, because you can startle them or they can get something in their head that he can get hurt. And or with dogs or elephants or tigers or anything. Because every now and then they go off and, I forget who the guy's name was, they got shredded by his own tiger, you know, the elephant.
Yeah.
The whale, or the killer whale killed the girl at SeaWorld. That stuff happened. You can't just say they're trained and that's it. You know, forget about it. That deal. And to me, you say, well, the tongue, you don't even do that well. You know, you can take your own samples and you can tame them to a degree, but the tongue, you're for sure never going to be able to forget about that one and say, okay, I got that covered, check that off the list. It's an accomplishment. It's a lifelong task that you got to watch everything.
You know, it illustrates this on what we've you hear about dog trainers and the types of breeds of dogs. When I was, when Josh and Kinder were smaller children, we had a chow. And I don't like dogs. I never have liked dogs. I'm not a pet person, but we had a chow. And that chow was a nice dog most of the time. But we got rid of it because there were a couple of times when, just slightly provoked, that the chow snapped. And you hear about the pit bulls, the same type of thing. And you can, if you have a firm hand and you're good at it, you can really train a pit bull and such. But at the same time, everyone recognizes that that's a dangerous breed of dog compared to others. Pit bull, Labrador, lick your face off, bite your head off, you know what I'm saying? And then, so the tongue is as it's indicated in the text in verse 8, the tongue is an unruly evil. Unruly. What does unruly mean? Well, you know, that describes my hair in the morning. You know, it's hard to control. It's unruly. Some are easy to control. The tongue is not among those. The tongue is hard to control. It is full of poison. And as a result, we've got to be careful with it. That's right.
I think we need to pay a little closer attention to language. It didn't say every animal's tamed or every beast is tamed. It says every kind. So a lot of us may have dogs or cats that are certainly tamed, but I don't know if anybody has a pet hyena.
That's true. That's true. I'm not sure if you can tame a hyena or not. I wouldn't want to try. Okay. All right, now continuing on with it, in verse 9, it says that concerning this tongue, it is that unruly evil, it's full of deadly poison. This is what we do with our tongue, characteristically, as men. We bless God and curse men that have been made in the likeness of God. It's not right. It's not right for us to be such a dichotomy to exist, for us to go different directions. And he, of course, uses some illustrations about this. He says, out of the same mouth proceed blessings and cursing. These things ought not to be so. He says, does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? No, it doesn't. Can a fig tree bear olives? This is against nature. It's not an appropriate thing, not a natural, not a right thing for an individual to be over here blessing people and talking to them. And speaking in such good terms and be nice and loving and then turn around and then be ugly and evil and conniving and lying and such. That's a hypocrisy. When you hear about the pure milk of the word, that word pure means single, made up of one thing. As Christians, we are to be pure in the sense that it's something against nature. It's inappropriate for that mixture to be there, where as sometimes our voice and our language and our usage is as good as it should be, and other times not. And this is something, again, if you see, in our language, people have a hard time with euphemisms. And other things. I'll just give you one example. Josh and I had a scramble golfing tournament that we went to yesterday, and one of his old classmates was there, and a nice young man. And Josh today is the same age, and he's in another group. They played, and he came over and visited afterward. Well, he is a nice young man in the sense he's personable and such, but his language is filthy. But he knew that Josh and I didn't use that kind of language, and wouldn't appreciate it, and so he refrained from using it. And yet, he simply could not pepper his language with those kinds of things. So he supplied euphemisms instead of the actual curse words. And it was actually absurd. It was comical to listen to him as his, you know, doing this and this and this, and every adjective was a profanity, but he had to change it, and he was sputtering, and it was just absolutely, he was incapable of speaking in a non-profane way. But he understood that the euphemism is a substitution for a profanity, but it's the same thing. As Christians, we need to be careful about those kinds of things and address it in this way. As we speak up here, your speech is supposed to be with grace, seasoned with salt. Your speech is supposed to be characteristic of righteousness. You're supposed to be careful in your speech. And when you consider a fig tree, fig trees only bear figs, they don't bear olives. If you consider a freshwater spring, it only has fresh water, it doesn't have bitter water combined or mixed. And if you're considering yourself a child of God and a righteous individual, then your language should always consistently be like that, or else it's not as it should be. And the idea that it's not a big thing, it doesn't matter, it's not that important, you're getting a little bit absurd here with your applications, you know, but it is what it is. It says what it says. In this regard, we need to be careful with regard to our communication, and be consistently so. Make sure that we're consistent in the way we speak. Out of the same mouth proceed blessings and curses. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Okay, well, we kind of covered the material in that regard. I don't want to give short shrift to it. Does anyone have any final comment about the section in verses 1 through 12? Yes, there was.
I want to make one comment about verse 8. It says, but no man can tame his tongue, and let him give up hope. I don't think the apostle means, or James means, that the tongue cannot be tamed. He just says that man cannot tame the tongue. God can tame the tongue. And he tames our tongue. James chapter 1 talks all about the word, the effect that the word has on us. Verse 18, for his own will, of his own will he brought us forth by the word of truth. He brought us forth from what? From that life. And in verse 21, we should receive with meekness the implanted word, and if we do that, the word will change us. So I think we don't have to despair.
No, and I took it a little bit different in the sense that my view of that was that you can't ever reach the point where, like, if any man thinks he stand, let him take heed lest he fall. You can't reach that point. You should never get to the point where you're just comfortable with going, letting it go, and saying what you want to say, that, hey, I've got it down, I've got it under control, because the tongue's not that type of a thing. But you are entirely correct in saying that we can. In fact, while it calls us to do so, we can ensure that our speech is seasoned with salt. We can do it if it's something that we are able to do. It takes effort and discretion and care to do so. I will give everyone an opportunity to add any comments that they want to the 12 verses that we've discussed next time, and after that we'll get into verse 13 and start the discussion on wisdom. All right. And we appreciate very much your kind attention today.